tracked around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Inside Motorsport again. We're going to look back at last weekend's A1 ring at Spielberg, which was, well, a McLaren procession, wasn't it? We also will speak to Gary Holt, who's the owner of Wakefield Park, or part owner of Wakefield Park, Eastern Creek Karting, and the V8 Lights. A fantastic interview for people in the Southern Tablelands in New South Wales, because big news in motorsport there. Tony Thornton, the president of Andrew, will be along to have a chat with us, along with Chris Ellis, who's one of the competitors in Formula Holden. So quite a variety of different motorsports this week on the show. Colin Ford, you are getting set for a big weekend at Oran Park, which is normally the grand final of the Shell Series.
Well, that's right. This year, the Oran Park is no longer the grand final of the Shell Series. This year, the season goes on for quite a few more races in the Shell V8 Supercar Series. We have races down at Calder, a race up in Queensland, Bathurst as well. So the season goes much, much longer than it used to. Once upon a time, I used to arrive and say, okay, Oran Park, that's the last of sprint races. Now we're down to the endurance races. It used to be the Sandown 500, then followed by a 1,000-kilometre race at Bathurst. But now, Bathurst is included. The 500-kilometre race up in Queensland is included. And the season just keeps on going. That's, it should be a critical race meeting, because this is the last race meeting where the Fords will be running with their current aero kit, because after the round at Oran Park, they'll be running with what they are calling the Holden Undertray. They're modifying the front scooter assembly of all the AU Falcons to set up the front undertray, the same as the Commodores, apparently to equalise the aerodynamic advantage, and also apparently it is one of those things. It's not so much over one quick lap, it's the consistency over a race distance. So that's kind of interesting to see how they go there. I think the Ford teams are all fired up, and as I say, they're all ready to win. We saw that last weekend, except for some oil on the track. Glenn Seaton could have taken out the first V8 round win for Ford for quite some time. But we'll see where that all heads next weekend. So it should be a very interesting weekend. And of course, you've got people like Jason Barguana, Garth Tanner. Of course, Garth Tanner will be back with hoping for some revenge. Jason Barguana, he'll be hoping for a repeat of what he did down at Winton last weekend. And if things work out, well, yeah, I'd say it could be one very, very interesting weekend. But of course, the men, they'll be trying to beat are the two Red Barons, Mark Scaife and Craig Lowndes in the Holden Racing Team Commodores. So those two guys will be the guys to beat. But of course, last week we had the announcement that Ivan Muller and Jason Plato will both be coming down to drive the second of the HRT cars. And the other news which was announced this week is the fact that the Holden Racing Team has advised Mark Noski that his services won't be required at Bathurst for the 1,000-kilometre race there, that he has been dropped from the HRT lineup, and now the rumour is that Nathan Pretty could be in the picture, and that'll be interesting to see how that works out, because basically Noski had been right through all the negotiations with the Holden Racing Team, and was just getting ready to sign, and they said, sorry, not required. And of course, the usual thing, he had turned down a number of offers of drives with other teams, including some very top-line teams, and no luck there. Of course, the man who should be wrenching is Jason Plato, who currently holds the Super Touring lap record at Bathurst. He apparently is looking forward to coming down to Bathurst for the V8 race, and maybe he's going to try and make up the double.
Yeah, didn't he come down last year with Thomas Mazzera?
No, that was only Menu.
That was Menu, okay.
And didn't get anywhere.
I'll set up. And well, Gary Holt joins us on the line now. And Gary, well, quite an interesting and varied occupation that this man has enjoyed. Snow skiing, Sydney to Hobart, yachtsman, karting magnate with the Eastern Creek International Karting Complex, and now a part owner of Wakefield Park. Gary, welcome to Inside Motorsports, and well, it's an interesting combination, of course, that you're involved in.
Well, Craig, you know, there's similarities between skiing and motor racing. It's quite amazing how many different friends I have from skiing and sailing that have now a following in motor racing, both in competing and as far as mechanics and also sponsoring race teams.
Now, snow skiing and karting aren't too interesting.
Well, yes, you know, like I've been 3 times Australian snow skiing champion, and back in the 70s and mid-70s, and said those like home away from home for me. But it's, as I said, there's a lot of similarities between snow skiing and motor racing. You've got to anticipate. You've got to anticipate the speed. You've got to also be very competitive. And, you know, when it comes to downhill racing, which I used to do over in Europe, between Australia, you're travelling 60 miles an hour, and 60 miles an hour on the snow is like travelling at 250 kilometres an hour in a race car.
Well, more recently, people might be familiar with your V8 Lights exploits, where you've been, well, having a sort of mixed run in the V8 Lights series.
Well, we have. We've got over the ex-Longhurst EL Falcon supercar, and a lot of people get confused what the lights is all about, and I know next year they're changing the word lights, but basically these cars are V8 supercars, except they're not the latest models. They are the previous models, and, you know, they are a supercar, and we'll be racing this car once again at Bathurst this year and also in the Queensland 500 against the big guys from the Shell round. But getting back to the lights, our first round we finished fourth, which was at Eastern Creek, which was a very good result. We were very happy with that. And then the second round, on the we qualified fourth on the Saturday down on Phillip Island, and then approximately two laps into the race, we blew an engine, so we got no points for Phillip Island. And then at Oran Park, we qualified fifth, and we finished the first race. We had quite a few problems in the first race. Spun out, but finished seventh in that race. And then the second race, we finished fourth. And then the final race, which we had very good tyres for, at the start, we went from fourth back to dead set last, and with a slipping clutch. And I think we finished that race in about sixth spot. But basically, we're in fifth spot in the V8 Light Series, and hopefully in 2 weeks' time up at Lakeside, we'll be, you know, in the top three or four.
Mm. Now, one thing you and a few other people have got together to do is purchase the Wakefield Park Raceway, which, combining with what you are already doing up there very successfully with the Eastern Creek Karting facility, it should be a big boon for the Goulburn community, and also a big boon for this Southern Tablelands region's motor racing.
Well, yes, you know, we four of us have just recently purchased Wakefield Park, and actually I'm in Sydney tonight, and I'm driving down tomorrow to spend 10 days down there. We're redesigning the track and rebuilding the track, because basically the facilities at Wakefield are excellent in the pit area with all the buildings and so on, but in all honesty, the track is not a proper racetrack, and we're going to turn it into a proper racetrack. We've had a best go down there who runs the V8 Shell Round and also the V8 Lights, and this track, at the moment, you couldn't run a V8 around there, but after, within the next 2 weeks, after we finish our modifications, we will be able to run V8s down there, and next year we'll be running a round of the V8 Lights down there, and I'm also having a meeting on Tuesday with Terry Byer from Wollongong, who's just formed a new NASCAR group, and we're going to have an X-shaped NASCAR oval racing down at Wakefield as well. We're also, in our plans, we're going to have street drag racing for an eighth of a mile drag strip there. That will come online within the next 2 or 3 months. We've also just purchased 10 V8 Oz cars, whereby the general public out there can get a group together, and we will teach you how to drive in these V8s, and you'll actually be able to, at the end of the day, have a race meeting in these V8s, have a race event. And on top of that, we have our V8 team based down there with all of our mechanics, and we actually have a second V8 whereby people can just ring the circuit, and we'll take them around as a passenger, as a thrill ride around the track. Plus, we've just purchased 8 buildings from the Olympic Village here at Homebush, and those buildings will be going on site, and we can accommodate up to 180 people, and that development should be finished by February. And with the recent headlines this week, unfortunately, of all these kids out there, with the recent accidents and the front headlines of the paper today, we have planned within the next 6 months of, and this is the idea of accommodation as well, to introduce a driving program, a proper driving, not advanced driving, but defensive driving, on how to get a car out of a skid and so on. And we're about to approach the RTA and the education department on that one. So there's quite a lot of things that we're going to be doing down at Wakefield, which is going to benefit the community of Goulburn, Canberra and the South Coast.
It sounds like a huge infrastructure that you're about to, and a huge investment you're about to pour into the area.
Well, you know, we're committed to spending over $5 million in the next 6 months. We purchased the land next door to Wakefield. Wakefield has approximately 130 acres, and we just purchased the land next door, which has an additional 550 acres. So we are committed. We're all motor racing, have an interest in motor racing. Michael Spies, my partner, who's partner in the V8, was the skipper of Nokia this year in the Sydney to Hobart Drop Race, and he's done 25 Hobarts. He's been 2 times World 18 Foot Skiff Champion, and he was also team manager for Warwick Brooklyn when Warwick won the Australian Former Ford Championships back in the early 80s. So we all have a strong interest in motorsports. Gary Wilmington, who's running the track for us. Gary has done 23 Bathurst. He'll be co-driving with myself at Bathurst this year. And our mechanics, we have 2 V8 mechanics down there, and they've been around with Gary for quite some time. So the whole background is motor racing.
It sounds like it's going to be a fantastic thing. Let's focus on a couple of things you talked about. The drag racing facility. Are you looking to speak with Andrew and get a facility, which they're badly lacking a facility in New South Wales?
Well, funny you say that, because I'm at Eastern Creek. I've got Eastern Creek International Karting Raceway, which, you know, we lease the land from the government through the ARDC. And a lot of people have been coming to me and asking me, this was before we purchased Wakefield, you know, if I could be the mediator between the egos of Jim Reid and maybe the egos of some people within the ARDC, and I've tried to be. But the way I see it is that, unfortunately, a lot of these drag racers have been misled and are being misled. You know, Jim Reid, you know, in the many conversations that I've had with Jim Reid, I've never met the man face to face, but it's always, you know, for the big boys. It's always it's a monetary thing. And unfortunately, the average drag racer out there doesn't really know exactly where Jim is coming from. And Jim, I believe, just wants the Jim Reid drag racing strip in Sydney. And the bottom line is that we, the ARDC and myself at Eastern Creek, pay a lot of money to the government. And here's Jim Reid wanting the land from the government. Well, that's just not going to happen. And at their meeting last week, I led to believe that there was a boat path, and at the beginning of it, Alan Jones got up there and said, well, you know, there's not going to be any taxpayers' money used in this, but when the boat was passed, the wording, there won't be any taxpayers' money used for this development, was left out, so I'm led to believe. I'm not saying that was the case, but this is what I've been informed. Now, we've gone to Andrew, and we've told Andrew that we have purchased this 550 acres of land, and if they're willing to come along and invest money and build a drag strip, then we have the land there. Drag racing, I'm not willing to spend the money on drag racing, but, you know, they're out there saying that they have all these vehicles and so on, and they need a drag strip. Well, personally, I believe they've got a drag strip at Eastern Creek, and if Jim Reid was to, with the lobbying he's attempting to do with drag racing for Eastern Creek, for his own development, if that was put to one side, then the ARDC, with their developers, would develop a proper drag strip at Eastern Creek. So the bottom line is that drag races, I believe, are being misled. One, they can have a proper drag strip at Eastern Creek, but Jim Reid doesn't want that because of his personal interest. And, or two, they can come and build a drag strip at Wakefield Park. So our doors are always open.
It sounds like, well, at least it's an opportunity that didn't seem to be there before. Now, just going back to your original foray into karting, how does someone who's a snow skier, Been in the Sydney to Hobart yacht race a number of times. How do you end up going out and building an international karting facility in the Greater West?
Well, funny you say that. I was doing a lot of sailing back in the during the 80s and spending a lot of time sailing, both you know, in yachts and also in one design sailing. And it was taking up too much of my family lifetime. And my father, I was more or less brought up around the car racing circuit. My father used to race when I was a kid. You know, from the age of four, I think I went to the first race meeting at Oran Park, number of Australian Grand Prix and everything. So I've always had a passion for motor racing. And I decided, a friend of mine took me away karting up at Lithgow. And I thought, well, this is fantastic sport. And within a week, I had my own kart. And I was travelling all over the countryside. And, you know, karting, there's 10,000 members in karting in Australia. It's the largest form of competitive motorsport available. And but we were travelling everywhere. And there was no proper karting track in Sydney. So I decided to start looking for a facility to or land to build a facility. But the problem is you've got noise, you've got a number of barriers, and there's just not the land in Sydney. So when the government offered to put the tender up for the Eastern Creek Raceway, that's where I became involved with the Australian Racing Drivers Club, and fortunately we won the tender, and we've built the world's biggest karting complex, which not only caters for racing but also for corporate karting, children, and, you know, we probably 30 corporate companies a week go through Eastern Creek International Karting Raceway. We've had Tom Cruise there, who hired the karting complex out exclusively last year for his 37th birthday party. Yesterday we had the singer Robbie Williams there. We get a lot of celebrities through the place, but we also Joe Blow off the street can turn up with his kids and enjoy the thrills of motor racing.
Mm. It seems like the karting complex has got a better repartee with the people out there in Sydney than actually the Eastern Creek Motor Circuit does, because you seem to have no trouble getting people into Eastern Creek, whereas the ARDC is having a fair bit of trouble to get people at events.
Oh, well, look, I run my business the way I run my business, and I really cannot get involved in how the ARDC runs their business. But, you know, in all honesty, you know, that could be a myth too. I've seen the ARDC in the last 12 months. I just came back from an event there today, which is the historic event, and, you know, they probably had 8,000 people there today, which was an event that wasn't publicised. But they had quite a few spectators there for the V8 round. You know, let's face it, it's not the best track in the world to be a spectator point of view. You know, it's nothing like some of the other tracks. And that's the brilliant thing about Wakefield Park that the best show really loved was that you could, you know, we can fit all the 15,000 spectators in there and you can see the whole circuit. And that's the brilliant thing that everyone likes about Wakefield Park.
Mm. Well, looking back to Wakefield Park, so we come full circle on this talk, when will we see the first sort of dirt being turned on these new projects? Next Monday?
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow morning. You know, it's happening.
And it's the model of what you've done with the corporate work and with the work that you've done at Eastern Creek Karting. Is that the sort of model you're bringing over here, but actually using circuit cars instead of cars?
Exactly. You know, it's the... you know, with karting, we have, at Eastern Creek, we have, you know, computerised lap timing, so that as soon as you pull up after your event, you know, you get a printout immediately of every lap time you've done, exactly what position you are in that event, and also as you're going around on a television screen, it comes up your position, your name, on a television screen, so the spectators can see exactly what position you're in, what lap time you've done, and we're using that technology down in Wakefield Park with VC8. And look, everyone wants to either have a ride or a drive of a V8, and we've got Holden versus Ford, and as I said, we've got a lot of corporate clients, and so all the marketing will be taking place out of my office at Eastern Creek, and we'll be aiming this V8, we call it the V8 Super Challenge, those clients.
Mm. Well, I just love the thought of, it might not be Super Speedway, but just oval track racing coming back, because coming from a Speedway family, the more oval track racing you can get, the better.
Well, as I just said, you know, we've got plans there, because I don't know if you realise what is happening with NASCAR. NASCAR have just sold organisation, all these NASCAR owners have formed a new organisation, Breakaway from Bob Jane, and there's 40 franchises out there available, of which up until last week they've sold 36. And they want to come to Wakefield and race, and we can put in an egg-shaped oval in Wakefield, utilising the new back straight that we're doing this week, and also the existing front straight with a nice big round corner going onto the from the old front straight onto the new back straight. And that's what they want. They don't want us to go and build and spend $30 million like Bob did at Calder, but they're looking for oval racing. So I'm sure the viewers of this network would all love to go and see 40 NASCARs thundering around Wakefield Park.
It just sounds fantastic. We look forward to catching up with you right throughout the rest of this season and into the new year, because one thing we would like to do is keep in touch with how the progress of all the developments are going.
Yes, Craig, well, any time, you know, and if anyone, we're about to launch a new website with Wakefield, and it's wakefieldpark.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also the Eastern Creek website is Eastern Creek Charts, which is double K with an S on the end, .com.au. So there'll be updates on the V8 Super Challenge and Wakefield Park on at the Eastern Creek website as well.
And I guess one other area that you'll eventually be able to enter into is factory tours. Once the V8 program gets fully moved down to Wakefield as well, people can go into a V8 workshop and see how the cars are assembled and all the background preparation.
Well, exactly. At the moment, we only have a very small garage there, but we're planning on this second stage development, and the DA is being lodged next week, whereby we're going to have a full conference room facility there, and adjoining that will be a V8 workshop, so people will be able to come in and have a look through the tour for the V8 workshop.
All right then, Gary, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and we look forward to all the news coming out of Eastern Creek and Wakefield Park in the near future, and good luck in, I think it's a fortnight's time at Lakeside?
Yes, no, fortnight's time.
Yeah, all right then, well, good luck with that one as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Craig.
Right, and in international Formula One news, there's been a lot happening this last week. Amongst the news this week is the fact that Arrows is looking at a deal with an Asian consortium to take over Peugeot's Formula One engine project for 2001. The Arrows Formula One team is set to do a deal this coming week where they will rebadge Peugeot engines in 2001 with another brand name. Many of the Peugeot team members, including a number of former Williams and Ferrari engineers, will be moving over to the new engine group, and interesting to say that Arrows, with their Supertech deal, will be taken over next year, and they'll be running a Peugeot, and it's the consortium is the Asian Motor Technics, so it'll be interesting to see who's sort of behind that one. The other Formula One news is the fact that in the last week, Dario Franchitti has tested a Jaguar Formula One car at Silverstone, and they had a number of days testing at Silverstone for the Formula One pre the Hockenheim Formula One race, and it was an interesting fact that Benetton's Giancarlo Fisichella was fastest overall, with Jenson Button giving Williams a steady boost by coming in second. But it was McLaren who left the circuit most confident, because they'd been running basically what they called a race setup all week in testing. As it was, as I say, Giancarlo Fisichella was the fastest in his Benetton from Jenson Button's Williams. Olivier Panis testing quite heavily for McLaren was third. Rinaldi was fourth for Sauber. Berti fifth for Jaguar. Coulthard sixth for McLaren. Pizzona seventh for Benetton. Lemaire eighth for BAR. Trulli ninth for Jordan. And Zonta was tenth for BAR. But as I say, Franchitti's was about 1 second off the pace of the other tester, which was Berti. But he said he was mainly concentrating on getting into a current Formula One car with groove tyres. Hadn't raced at Silverstone since 1996 prior to some track modifications being made. And he was just basically interested in setting consistent times, learning and getting it setting. He said the biggest thing he picked up in the difference between the Formula One car and the kart vehicle was that the Jaguar has carbon fibre brakes. So in case you can jump on the brakes and things do happen immediately, whereas there's steel brakes on the karts. So I'd say Franchitti could be another driver heading over to Formula One in 2001. And if he goes, there's now talk that Zanardi could replace Franchitti at Team Green. So, you know, that's sort of where Zanardi will go. It just keeps going all over the place.
Hey, look, we remember last week we were reporting on Mika Häkkinen's holiday before his effort at the A1 ring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mika Häkkinen has been warned that his summer holiday could wreck his dream of a hat-trick of world titles. This no less given to him by Niki Lauda. The Finn took a 10-day break after the last race in France to recharge his batteries for the championship run into the finish. But Häkkinen had decided, has been told that this could backfire in Austria on the weekend when he could fall further behind the chase, allowing McLaren's teammate David Coulthard to maintain his recent superiority. Three-time former world champion Niki Lauda told Häkkinen he should have tested in Italy the week before the event rather than rest in Monaco with his wife Erja, who is expecting their first child in November. Lauda added, if Häkkinen is faster than Coulthard this weekend, it will have been the right decision. If not, it will have been the wrong one. And as it turned out, with him going on to win the championship, it was exactly the right decision. And for more information on that, we might cross to the BBC's report.
Racing in the Austrian Grand Prix turned into one long victory lap for the McLaren team. Mika Häkkinen led from pole to finish, and he was followed home by his teammate David Coulthard. But Michael Schumacher, who'd been under fire for some of his start line antics, was the victim of an early collision this time. Jonathan Ledlow reports.
Ron Dennis couldn't have scripted this one better. McLaren's 1 and 2 on the grid, 1 and 2 at the flag, with Michael Schumacher long gone because of a first corner pile-up. At a stroke, the show lost its box office star, but Dennis would have relished what became a masterclass in McLaren Mercedes authority. It was Häkkinen's first win in 2 months, and it was probably as emphatic as any of his previous 15. It's driven him firmly back into the championship reckoning, 8 points behind Schumacher, 2 down on Coulthard, who have no option but to accept a role reversal from the last race in France. Barrichello was also grateful for what he got. Villeneuve's 4th place and Button's 5th would ensure no let-up in speculation over their futures. Alain Prost, meanwhile, refused to confirm or deny reports that he'd sold his team to a Canada-based consortium.
And moving on to other international news, and of course some news that actually brings it home to Australia, is that a draft calendar for next year's World Rally Championship has been announced. The draft calendar sees a number of changes, which means that many rallies around the world will enjoy better weather than what they've seen over the last couple of years. Keying this is the Safari Rally, which has been moved from its usual February slot, which is to the middle of July in 2001, which should be the middle of Kenya's dry season.
Sure, that's going to be hot, isn't it?
Yep. Another beneficiary is Rally New Zealand. It's been moved from its winter slot in July to September, which is New Zealand's spring. So all those spring lambs over there, that'll be interesting. Amazing season for New Zealanders. Oops. And the Cyprus Rally, they've got a provisional date of February next year, which will only give them 6 months to prepare for the rally. So the provisional dates for next year are the Monte Carlo Rally on January 19th, 20th, Swedish Rally, February 9th, 11th, Cyprus Rally, February 23rd, 25th, Portugal Rally, March 9th to 11th, Catalonia Rally, March 23rd to 25th, Argentina, May 4th to 6th, Acropolis, June 1st to 3rd, Safari, July 13th, 15th, Finland, August 24th, 26th, New Zealand, September 21st to 23rd, San Remo, October 5th to 7th, Corsica, October 19th to 21st, Australia, November 2nd to 4th, and Great Britain, November 23rd to 25th. So, looks to be a good change, particularly in terms of some of that timing there. Let's say New Zealand Rally being moved to their spring will make it much better, and of course Safari Rally going to their summer should make it quite good as well. Other news this week is the fact that David Ledley is likely to make a return to to the British Touring Car Championship when the champion heads to Donington on July 30th. He's been asked to join the privateer pro motorsport team, taking over from Colin Blair, who's been driving a Nissan Motorsport British Touring Car Championship team. Nissan Primera, it's actually the car that Laurent Aiello drove last year. So David Leslie is looking to step back into things there because Blair hasn't been doing particularly well. So it would be interesting to see another one of those guys back in their cars. In other news, we go to kart. And this weekend, if I can find my piece of paper, I've got 6,000 pieces of paper on the desk, he says as always. This time it's Michigan 500, and Paul Tracy has seen himself up on pole 4, the Michigan 500, with a new track record lap of 234.946 miles per hour.
It's not hanging around, is it?
No, that's moving, as they say. Remember, that's miles per hour. That's fast. He is just a fraction ahead of second place driver Michael Andretti. And the grid, as it stands for the Michigan 500.
We can hear from the fellas too.
Okay, well, if we can hear, we'll listen to the guys and what they've got to say.
Paul Tracy spoke after his hot lap.
It's a good run weekend, and I got crew guys and our engineering staff really worked to get them off the season in the wind tunnel, refining the car and making it, and obviously Honda getting the power to go off that front and slide on me in 3 and 4, and I was able to make a slight change to the car, and it was, well, I think it's everything helped a little bit with the Tanford wing. If you can just get a little bit more, I mean, it definitely helped. Was good. I mean, the car was great this morning. We ran 2:39 this morning, and you know, to come out and qualify now that the sun's out and the heat's come up, to run 2:35, I think that's pretty fantastic.
Great job. You have a good run tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah, just in behind him was Michael Andretti in the Newman Haas car, and third on the grid was the second of the Newman Haas cars driven by Christian Fittipaldi, and is what he had to say after qualifying.
Christian Fittipaldi here with second fastest yesterday morning in practice right now. 234.2, Christian. That's just a tick off the track record. How fast is it out there? How fast is it going to get?
I don't know. I hope it doesn't get any quicker. I hope we're maxed out right now. But it was a good lap, a good effort from the whole team, and the car basically ran what it could run. It couldn't go any quicker, and we're happy to be where we are. But again, tomorrow's a long race, and we'll see what happens.
A lot of people have good things to say about these Volvos on the Super Speedway. Are they good and consistent? Do they feel comfortable to drive?
Oh, they feel pretty good. I'm happy with my car right now.
That's Christian Fittipaldi.
Yeah, so actually that was Michael Andretti. Christian Fittipaldi third. Dario Franchitti, after his Formula 1 test, was back there, and he qualified fourth fastest. Jules de Ferran Tensky was fifth. Jimmy Vassa in the first of the Ganassi cars, sixth. Juan Pablo Montoya was seventh. Alex Tagliani in the fourth fastest was eighth. Patrick Carpentier in the second of the fourth fastest was ninth. And Kenny Brack, driving for Rahal, was tenth, with Max Pappas, another Rahal car, 11th. Another driver, Mike Blundell, way down in 16th. Roberto Moreno, the other super sub, down in 16th. Tony Kanaan,
defending race champion.
Yes, that's right. Driving for Mo Nunn, according to the entry list here. And he's languishing down in 18th place on the grid.
Mm, but in fact, we also had an opportunity to hear from Michael Andretti, Mario, Michael Andretti, as he spoke after his qualifying run.
So Andretti and Michael, typically, you aren't happy after qualifying. I thought I was going to get a happy Andretti interview, but not today. It was on the front row, though.
Yeah, on the front row. It's good. I guess I was hoping for top five going into qualifying, so I guess I can't complain, but sure would have been nice.
A new track record, 234.9. That's really fast. Is it too fast?
In my opinion, it is, but, you know, we'll have to see. Hopefully, they'll figure out a way to slow him down a little bit.
That's Michael Andretti. He starts on the outside of the front row tomorrow.
Yes, and the Japanese driver, Takuya Kurosawa, driving the coin team, he...
How the hell did you say that?
Simple, I know Japanese. He set no time. He had a major accident, was taken to hospital during qualifying. So he's out the weekend. So it's only a 24-car grid that's starting up this time around. Interesting as well to note that at the last race in Canada, that Paul Tracy wore a special Greg Moore commemorative helmet, which was auctioned off as part of the event to raise funds for a new Greg Moore foundation. And apparently that's now going to become a bit of a tradition for a number of drivers in terms of who are friends of Greg Moore, that they will, one of them each year will be expected to run with Greg Moore's helmet colours at Montreal for the IndyCar race up there. as a sort of an ongoing tribute to the Greg. So that's something very good to see.
The President of Andrew has been involved in, well, a lot of issues right at the moment over in New South Wales 1 week, and looking at the new rule book that's coming out, particularly with interest in pro stock on another hand. And, of course, only a month ago, well, you cannot do anything about the weather, Tony, but it did put the spoilers on a fantastic finale to this year's championship, and the rescheduling it to October long weekend is probably not going to be too bad a thing. Tony Thornton, thanks for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Craig. The Winter Nationals was a huge disappointment. We had one good day out of three, and there were some fairly spectacular performances put in even then. The track was in great shape with a couple of American experts over here to have a bit of a fresh approach to track preparation, and they did a fine job. And the night ended pretty much on Friday with Robin Judd running his 617 in top door slammer, which was equal to the fastest in the world at the time. And Saturday morning dawned a bit overcast. It wasn't bad, but it started raining late Saturday morning and didn't stop. So we all then threw ourselves into meetings to try and work out what the best approach was, and primarily due to the Olympics being in Sydney in September, we had no option but to come back in October.
Yeah, with this going on now, the meeting that was held last Wednesday, in fact, we were just hearing from Gary Holt, who's involved in Wakefield Park, and they're talking about doing some street drag racing over an eighth of a mile. And in fact, he said he's talked to Andrew about the possibility of them building a circuit at Wakefield Park.
Yes, I think the ownership changed only in the last couple of months, and we had some involvement with Wakefield Park early in the year with a four-cylinder rotary event. There was no drag racing, of course, but that area is something that we're really interested in, and we were pleased to be involved. We haven't had a formal approach yet regarding any drag racing at Wakefield Park, and we're not sure what sort of limits there might be or other barriers. But certainly there are a number of parties right around the country in regional areas at the moment who are looking to establish drag racing, and I'd certainly be happy to add Wakefield Park to the list.
With the New South Wales experience at the moment, it has been bad for the last few years. Did the meeting at Wednesday, which got great media coverage, by the way, and that's something that's always helpful, particularly in any motorsport, but perhaps it wasn't for the right reason, because it wasn't talking about racing results, it was talking about how do they get it back there in New South Wales, well, into New South Wales and more predominantly into Sydney.
Yeah, there has been one public meeting late last year, which I wasn't part of, but I've certainly been involved in most of the other things that go on in Sydney, because there's a fairly solid group of people working to make something happen. The proposed Western Sydney Motorplex is the focus of all of that, because it's far and away the best option for drag racing in New South Wales and also nationally. But, you know, we have to consider our options, and that remains the only one at this point in time. We met with the government late last year, and then during January, to discuss what might be possible on the existing Eastern Creek property. And we looked at the options of a parallel straight, as we did in 1998. The government went away to consider the viability of that, and we've never had a result, which was one of the main reasons for the meeting. We were basically trying to point out that we really want some answers. And certainly with the interest we had from people like Alan Jones and the Federal Sports Minister, Jackie Kelly, I think that meeting gave the whole cause more credibility than it's ever had up to now.
What about in the ACT? Have we got any news there?
Yes, I actually spoke with Jeff Devlin, who attended the meeting in Sydney, because he's obviously very interested in what's going on in New South Wales as well. And they had their day in court, or their 2 days in court, I think, last December. They were due for a result of some kind in June. We still don't have an answer there either, and they're pursuing that as vigorously as they can, because by rights they need to wait until the judge has made his decision and handed it down, although Jeff is still confident that we'll be back racing there in the not too distant future.
The one motorplex that is well on its way is over there in Ravenswood, and obviously you have been keeping your finger on the pulse as to how that's progressing.
I certainly have, and for anyone who's interested, the the Cornada Motorplex website on the internet has a wide range of photos of what's going on. It's quite encouraging for anyone who's in drag racing in Australia at the moment to have a look at that. But the complex will bring drag racing much closer to Perth than it has been in the past, which is a bonus. And it will also provide some of the best facilities we've ever seen for drag racing in the country, because since Willowbank was built in the early 80s, this will be the first time a drag strip's been put together from scratch just for drag racing, and we're all pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I'm running short of time, sorry, and I'm sorry to cut this short to all the drag racing fans particularly, and to yourself, Tony, but the pro-stock rules, which have been causing a lot of angst, I guess, with the competitors, how has that looked like it's going to be resolved?
Well, that was one of the real positive results of the Winter Nationals, Craig. Most of what was going on with pro-stock had been discussed widely in the months preceding the meetings at which the decisions were made. The only hiccup, I think, was the application of a weight penalty of sorts to overseas bodied cars. That was the main bone of contention. And we had a couple of meetings with the pro stock guys during the Winter Nationals. Unfortunately, there was plenty of time for that, but the result was good. And we reviewed what we had. We basically put the body limits on the back burner until 2004, because something that was already in the works was this year a change in the transmission operation of the cars, which isn't a hugely expensive change, but then next year with the support of the pro stock guys, we're changing over to a 400 cubic inch engine limit, which will speed the cars up, make the class more spectacular, provide a few more options for people. It's also a huge expense, and certainly they didn't want to be worrying about changing other aspects of the car when they've got to worry so much about what makes it go down the track.
All right then, Tony, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you again, and I look forward to catching up with you throughout the off-season, as it were, as we build up to October.
Well, any time at all, Craig, and thank you very much for your interest.
Yes, Tony Thornton joining us on Inside Motorsport. We thank him for his time. And, just whilst we're staying on drag racing, last weekend it was the IHRA CarQuest Empire Nationals. And, what an interesting race it was, because Bruce Litton in Top Fuel has taken the title at that event. It was Litton in Top Fuel, Quain Scott in the Mopar Performance Parts Proto Modified, Jimmy Rector in the IHRA.com Funny Cars, Jay Turner in the Screamin' Eagle Nitro Harleys, Ron Miller in the Sunoco Pro Stock, Mike Decker in Pro Outlaw, all the professional class winners in the 12th annual event. And it is, of course, the fifth event in the 11 that comprise the Summit Drag Racing Series. Now, in the IHRA's Pro Modified class, there has been a source of controversy over the new rules directed towards slowing down the blown cars. And prior to the event, the supercharged combination was hit with a new set of regulations that mandated that all would have to run a 3-speed transmission and a 4.57 or less rear end gear ratio. Additionally, the blown cars were increased in weight by 50 pounds, while the nitro injected entries were granted a weight break of the same amount. When the flurry of controversy cleared, it proved to be a storybook final round, with two of each of the engine combinations most outspoken drivers meeting in the final. Quain Scott, 40 years old, from Inman in South Carolina, defeated the radical 49 Mercury owned by Native American Johnny Rocker and driven by Australia's Troy Critchley. Rocker's entry is powered with a supercharged engine, and Scott was quoted as saying, "They, the blower cars, probably feel the same way about those rules as we did about the introduction of high helix blowers in 1998, Scott explained. Those who last came to victory in the 1999 CarQuest Autumn Nationals. It looked like the rules are hurting them as much as it hurt us back in 1998. Jim Richter defeated Scott Weaney in the Funny Car Final at 5.941 at 226.47 miles an hour to Weaney's 6.092 at 182.29 when Weaney's body separated from the chassis at 1,200 feet following a blower explosion, with Richter taking evasion to miss the accident or to miss the body as it crashed down the track. Richter, who recently celebrated his 37th birthday, drove his Top Fuel Dragster for the first time, drove a Top Fuel Dragster for the first time as a birthday present, and he will contest the IHRA races at Epping, Rockingham, Shreveport, and both Top Fuel and in Funny Car. And for Bruce Litton, who did go on to take the title, well, he did it uneventfully as his competitor. Well, it became a non-event because he fouled out in that final round, so he took an easy victory. I should go to the bottom of the page here because it was important to see, and it was Paul Ramone who fouled out in that final. But the point standings for the Summit Drag Racing Series of the IHRA, just to let you in, Paul Ramone still leads with 543, Bruce Litton 537, Clay McLean 448, Jim Head 405, Jim Bailey 334. Pro Modified, of course, where we have an interest, Fred Ham is 433 with three wins, in fact, Quayne Stott with a 286, Ed Hoover with a 255, Troy Critchley also 255 but no wins to his name, and Al Bills is in fifth position with a 236.
Yes, and in other news around the place, Gerhard Berger has said that BMW could consider returning to having an international touring car program if they can get a touring car program that is at the international level. In short, they're not interested in just a national-based series, such as the German-based DTM, but they're looking at any formula that will leave the opportunity open for them to race their cars internationally. At this stage, they're looking at things such as the new Superstars category and also the European Super Touring Championship category, where the number of drivers have been running older BMW 320 series cars with some reasonable success. They've said that the main thing is that they're not worried about the technical sophistication of the series as being an overriding factor, but its stability and internationality are the key. They want a series where they can have their various subsidiaries and domestic employees in markets such as Australia, Japan, UK, as well as Germany, can get involved. So that sounds like, you know, we could see something back there with BMW in the future, which would be good to see them back competing, because they are good. But it's all, of course, tied in with their Formula One program.
Mark Ellis joins us on the line, one of the runners in the Formula Holden ranks. Mark, what drew you to Formula Holden?
Well, we started in Formula 2 probably 10 years ago now, and decided to step up a bit into the faster category.
Mm. It's a pretty tough division, and I would imagine not the cheapest of open-wheelers that you could be driving.
No, it's definitely not cheap, and it's definitely tough. We just do it on a minimum budget. We probably run on the a budget that the other guys run on one weekend. We run for the whole year.
But there's something about them that really makes them a fantastic division to watch, and also, I would imagine, a fantastic division to drive.
Oh, really exciting to drive. We just come back from Willowbank in Queensland, and we had a terrific race up there with five other guys in the first race, and unfortunately I stepped on it too hard and spun it coming out of the corner.
Yeah, I was about to say, Queensland saw you out in the boonies there.
Yeah, that was in race one, but race two we made up for it. We actually got a first in the Silver Star division, which is for the lesser costly cars, I suppose.
Now, your car is an early model car as compared to what the fellas like Murchison, Halliday, Wills, of course, are running, and it does then make it a bit more difficult for you.
Yeah, well, the 92 that we've got is a early model car, but it is still competitive. It's really the lack of dollars that comes into it, lack of track time, I suppose, more than anything.
How long have you been out there pursuing your dreams of motorsport?
Oh, about 18 years.
starting in Cast or starting in Appendix Gray?
No, we actually started in Autocross, a form of special vehicles going around a rally circuit, if you like.
In fact, that's a division that's been lost to Australia somewhat, but it's absolutely huge in Europe.
Yeah, definitely.
And it brings home a lot. It's like Speedway for rally fans.
Yeah, if you like, it's in a closed circuit and close to the action for the fans, yeah.
Now, moving on from there, you then obviously had a look at some open wheel racing.
Oh, we progressed into Formula Libre, and we made our own chassis and the likes, mainly bike engine powered cars. And then we decided to get into a category that was equal for everybody as far as engines and specs on the cars, and that was Formula 2.
Yeah. Now, Formula 2 has sort of been trying to make a comeback here in Australia. Have you looked at that division maybe going back to there, or you just think Formula Holden is the best way for Australia to stay?
No, I think Formula Holden's the best way to stay as far as I'm concerned. Very fast category. Take nothing away from Formula 2, which is now Formula 3 in Australia. Certainly an exciting category as well. Not a heck of a lot cheaper to run, though.
With the Formula Holdens, what would you say would cost to run a season in a budget team, in a Silver Star team?
In a Silver Star team, well, as I said earlier, we're running on a very small budget, and we're probably doing it for between 30,000 and 40,000, I suppose, for the year. The large teams, yes, they're running around about the $300,000.
Mm. It's a lot of money, even 30,000 to 40,000, considering that the profile of open wheel racing in Australia has not got what the Kintops share.
Oh, definitely a lot of money, but I suppose it comes back to the enjoyment of it. And I love open wheelers, I just can't think of myself sitting in a Kintop.
For yourself, the street races have been quite interesting this year, particularly with Adelaide and Canberra.
Yeah, Adelaide was a great circuit. Canberra was a great layout, just for our category, a little bit rough and probably a tad narrow.
Do you think you'll be coming back there, or do you think that common sense might prevail and they might say, well, let the Formula Fords run that track where they can get side by side, and we'll pick a more suitable venue?
No, from what I understand, they're going to resurface the venue and widen it, so Formula Holden will definitely go back. It's part of the show, and we like to be in front of a big crowd.
Mm. The Tasman Series has been an extra benefit for Formula Holden drivers, giving you a chance to run overseas, and also it's given a lot of drivers who live in the Northern Hemisphere a reason to come south once again, as they used to in the great old days of Longford.
Yeah, it's definitely a great series. We went there last year, and a brilliant place to visit, and a great place to race as well.
All right, now, sponsor-wise, I'm sure that you are helped out by quite a few.
Oh, very minimal, but the ones we are sponsored by definitely put in a bit that they can.
And they are?
Oh, well, we've got SMY Plating down in Melbourne. We've got Nouveau Kitchens. Miller Motors is one of my main sponsors. They also pit crew for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's about it, actually. And, we just picked up Ripco 2 meetings ago. And they're helping with a fair bit of product.
Mm. Are the Formula Holden engines, which are basically the V6 power plant, is there a lot that you are allowed to do to those cars, or to those engines?
They're very limited. We're based on a compression ratio, a maximum CCs, and a fuel intake, air intake, which restricts them very much.
Of course, with the tyres and the aero packages you're running, it just means what you're losing in straight line speed, you make up for in spades in braking and cornering.
Oh, definitely. We're faster around the corners than anything in Australia, and they're the fastest cars in Australia.
Mm. And in fact, probably, pound for pound, probably a better looking division as well, because at least you have some passing where you don't see someone pushed off the track.
Yeah, true. Well, hopefully not pushed off the track anyway, but we don't like the rubber wheels. It gets very costly and very dangerous.
Now, Mark, your goals for the rest of this championship?
Well, at the moment, we've scraped our way into third in the Silver Star, and after winning at Willowbank, we're looking forward to some more wins and hopefully scratching to second and maybe first.
All right, then. Well, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, Mark, and we look forward to seeing your results as they continue on right through the championship season and, of course, all that action catches it on trackside.
Thank you.
And over in the UK, the Power Tour Series, which is a fairly popular series over there, moves to Croft, which is in northern Yorkshire this weekend. It again involves the National Saloon Car Championship, where Peugeot driver Dan Eaves has got the pole in that series from Simon Harrison in the Ford Focus. Interestingly enough, that car has had quite a number of weight penalties applied over time, and it still continues to win. In fact, I actually saw a rather satirical advert put in by Peugeot saying thanks to all their opposition for insisting they carry that weight penalty because it's actually helped them get better traction. So they're running there this weekend. As well, the British GT Championship is running with Sonny Ertis and Andy Purvis in a Marcos LM600 taking position there from Chris Ellison in Astley in a Lotus Esprit. Tim Harvey, the name known here in Australia, sitting in fourth place in Porsche 911 GT2 along with Neil Cunningham, sitting in sixth in his Chrysler Viper. That series going on very well there. And of course, this weekend sees the British Formula 3 Championship going to Croft. And this weekend we also see an Australian driver in the form of Marcus Ambrose joining that series. He's given up with his contestant of the French Formula 3 Championship. And he's done very, very well for his first time out, sitting sixth on the grid there. The pole position holder for the Formula 3 race at Croft today is Takuma Sato from Thomas Scheckter, who's the son of Jody Scheckter, and Nicholas Castilla, Ben Collins, Antonio Pisonia, another well-known name there, Marcus Ambrose and Gianmaria Bruni, Andy Preo, Milos Pavlovic and Andrew Kirkcaldy running at the 10, so it's going to be interesting for them.
In actual fact, it does seem that Jody Scheckter's son's looking quite good to get at least a test driver's spot from the news I've been receiving over the internet.
Well, that's right. He's very likely to end up with a test driver's spot, and most other things, I'd say if he doesn't get a genuine long-term test driver's spot, he'll probably get a Formula 3000 spot. This weekend, as well, for people into the historic end of things, it's the COIS Historic Festival at Silverstone, where they're celebrating 50 years of Formula 1. And this year they've got a number of Formula 1 world champions, including Jackie Stewart and Nigel Mansell, being reunited with some of the cars in which they have competed. Mansell is driving the classic team Lotus Type 39, owned and run by Lotus founder Colin Chapman's son Clive. The Lotus 39 is the first Grand Prix test car tested by Nigel before Chapman gave the world championship to his break in the Formula 1 at the Austrian Grand Prix in 1980. The second car Mansell will drive is Lotus 87B. This car was a car in Nigel's first full season in Formula 1. It represents one of the most controversial cars in the championship's history. This was the two-part car, the one which actually had the two parts that moved. And it was tested quite heavily by Elio De Angelis, qualified in the, for the first Grand Prix season at Long Beach, but it was then banned. The other cars there, Jackie Stewart's driving in the Tyrrell 003, which he won his second championship. Jack Brabham is supposed to be driving a car bearing his name, whilst Roy Salvadori and Sterling Moss will drive machinery from the 50s, including one of the cars there will be an Alfa Romeo 158 Alfa, which Juan Manuel Fangio won his first race, and a BRM V16. So, should be some interesting stuff. A couple of Silver Arrows from Mercedes-Benz and an Auto Union. Good stuff.
Now, because I don't listen to the show, did you actually do the American Le Mans qualifying?
No, I didn't.
All right, so let's have a look whilst we're on Power Tour. We'll segue neatly into American Le Mans qualifying.
That's right, they're going to Sears Point next, and the qualifying after the first qualifying session saw...
So there's Sears Point now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And on pole there, it was the Audi, North American Audi Sport, Audi R8 of Nishan Capello from the Pinoz LMP1 of Brabham and Magnussen. Third on the grid was the second of the Audis of Bieler and Pirro, with the second of the Pinozes of O'Connell and Cato sitting fourth on the grid. Fifth on the grid was the BMW V12 of Lato and Muller, with the Team Racanelli SRL Lola B2K of the Renegade and Chiatarella in 6th. Junon and Avalon, 7th and 2nd of the BMWs. And then Johansson and Smith Johansson, Matthews Racing Renault 2KQ. First of the GTS cars is the Croker Dodge Viper GTSR of Van Vliet and Beretta, with their sister team car of Donahue and Archer right behind them in 12th. Then Rice and Brown in the Rook Motorsports Porsche 911. First of the GT cars is 14th, which is the Cunningham and Johnson Prototype Technology Group BMW M3.
Mm-hmm. Look, as we change from four to two wheels very quickly, the Fuel the Passion campaign is something you're going to see hotting up. Of course, Fuel the Passion is to do with the 2000 Qantas Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix at Phillip Island. That's 27th to the 29th. And some interesting stories coming out, along with the 500cc Yamaha 2-seater thrill rides, which are going to be available. A unique Yamaha YZZR 500 two-seater motorcycle is fully specifications like the 500cc machines raced by the Yagi and the Carlos Checker, Gary McCoy and Reggie Laconi, but with an extra seat for a very privileged passenger. Now, I haven't read the press release, so I'm not going to fool you with how I know how you can get that ride, but the Fuel the Passion campaign, you'll be hearing a lot more of it, as I said, as we build up to that one indeed. And I should mention, just quickly, that Gary McCoy, here it is right here, the veteran Luca Catalana, has been preferred to Australia's Anthony Govert, so I wasn't right at any stage, by multiple world champion Kenny Roberts Sr. in the 500 Modena's team for the weekend's German Motorcycle Grand Prix. After riding the lightweight three-cylinder Modena's, it were to a world championship point in his sole race in Britain 2 weeks ago, the controversial 25-year-old Govert has been told to lose weight before he's given another chance by the team. Govert admitted at the British Grand Prix that he was 5 to 8 kilograms overweight.
Now, one of the interesting things coming out of Coy's was a quote from Nigel Mansell. He said that he could sit in a modern Formula One car and still qualify
unlike
on the front row.
Unlike when he went to race for McLaren those years ago when he couldn't fit in a Formula One.
Yeah, well, just the way the Formula One cars are now much larger in the cockpit, he said it wouldn't be a problem. He said, oh, I could definitely be on the front row in the right car. It would all depend on the machinery.
AFL news coming up. I don't know if St Kilda had a win, but I certainly know the Carlton Blues did not. So it wasn't as exciting week for me as I had hoped. But Colin, one final thing as we round out.
Yes, the latest issue of Motorsport News, issue number 2 of the new format, is out now. And
are they numbering it 2 or are they numbering it
184, but the second of the new format is out now. Of course, one of the key stories there, Mark Webber, is it bye-bye arrows and hello to Benetton, and also the Ford team is looking up to things. And, of course, the one thing we didn't mention quickly, Häkkinen, will he lose his Austrian Grand Prix win because of the loss of that FIA seal on the electronic black box?
We're going to have more, hopefully, from the BBC in the weeks to come on that. But AFL is up after the break.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
Depression is a major factor in the increase of teenage suicide. Depression is a major factor in the increase of teenage suicides.
Just kids, honey, about being a bit of a nerd and that. But we didn't think he'd go kill himself. If only he'd told us how he felt. Maybe we could have helped him.
Rotarians, through the Australian Rotary Health Research Fund, are helping to fund vital research into mental illness.
Just couldn't quite offload. Held up by Larkin.